Hey there, this is Cross.
I'm PJ.
And I'm Josh.
And we are Words and Whiskey, a podcast for veteran and novice readers like we tackle fiction novels and love to talk about what we're drinking. You should think of us as your intoxicating weekly book club.
There's three of us.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
It is crazy.
There's
four of us if you count this fruit fly that's bothering me.
And that fruit fly might be as featured on this episode as us. So, you know, like,
we'll add him in as a guest. I'll put that in the show notes for sure. And fruit fly that will not leave me alone. We're here today, obviously, to introduce Josh as sort of the new co-host, taking over responsibilities for PJ on the weekly basis. So very exciting in that realm. Excited to have you.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. I feel weird about it a little bit, you know, because look, I get that me and PJ are about the same height, but I do feel like it's big shoes to fill. PJ, we're a full foot off, I think.
Like that. Yeah, maybe
something like that. Yeah. And I feel about as intimidated by stepping into PJ's shoes as I do standing next to PJ. You know, podcasting giant, a human giant. It's fine. I'm happy to be here, but I am scared.
I mean, I'll let you in on a little secret. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing.
Oh, no.
You're going to do just fine.
That's fair. You know, none of us know what we're doing, but I really love and respect you guys and what you do, and I'm very happy to be here. So,
yeah, so I figure it makes sense to maybe give a little bit of an origin story here to some degree, beyond just you even, but also like how we knew each other. PJ, do you want to run through how we met Josh, where that came from?
I believe you interacted with Josh before I did.
I don't think so.
No, we met the same night.
The same night, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We were just into the same music, and I think Cross was on the call 5 minutes before you.
Yeah.
So. All right. Well, fair enough then. But we met through, or as a result of, starting our D&D podcast together, Tales of Kana. And that proved to be such a great dynamic between all five of us that were on that show. And you can listen to the history of that.
Yeah. You can listen physically
through that. That was a great time.
I will say there's like that aspect of like, person I really like says, hey, putting together a D&D podcast with some people you've never met. You want to jump in? And I'm like, well, yeah, I'm gonna, but like, who are these people gonna be? You know, and I'm sure both of you felt the same way to a degree. And then, yeah, we logged on like a world building session zero where we played not D&D, but in an entirely different game. And I was like, I feel like I've been buds with these guys for like a decade. You know, like it was so easy. You guys are just the coolest people. And it was like the second I met you, I'm like, these are the types of people I want to talk about nerdy stuff forever with. You know, so.
It certainly doesn't hurt that we do like, collectively, the three of us like the same music exactly. So that was like an instant bond. We also were reading the same things. You were reading Red Rising at the time. And then you started talking about The Wheel of Time. And I'm like, it's a well-read series, but there's so few people of whom have committed to the whole thing that it's like, oh my God, like how, what?
Hey, everybody's read Eye of the World.
Yeah, except PJ.
And then a lot of people have read Shadow Rising, which is my favorite of the bunch, but not a lot of people finished Winter's Heart.
a lot of people didn't finish Winter's Heart.
Yeah, a lot of people started it. I had a good time by the end. I don't know.
PJ, notably, Winter's Heart is a part of a two book sequence called The Slog in Wheel of Time, where like people just are like, ooh, we don't really like those. they're not fun like the other books.
Are they necessary?
Yes.
Yeah.
Incredibly.
They're also like the both books, I would say maybe three books. But both books are good books in there. Like they're like 200 pages too long, you know? But there's good books in there for sure.
Yeah, yeah, and when you're nine books into a series, you know, you're just like, oh,
you
my
don't want to hit
God.
A slog.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah,
yeah.
A multi-book, 2,000-page slog.
You're totally right. For some reason, I was like, Winter's Heart isn't that long. No, it fucking is. It's like 700 pages, and the next one's another 700 pages.
Yep.
Oh God,
exactly.
And then Knife of Dreams is incredible. So I mean, that's
of Dreams is great.
Yeah, yeah. And then he died. So
well, you know, don't we all?
Yeah, don't we all? Yeah, so that's a little bit of an origin. Speaking of books, let's talk about some of the things that you like. You know, what sort of things are you into? Give kind of listeners a little rundown on that. So we'll start with books, obviously. I think that's the natural point to talk about. What's sort of your realm?
Yeah, I mean, the quickest rundown, I like started on Narnia, you know, and well, I started on the Bible, let's be clear. And then I went to Narnia, and then I went to The Lord of the Rings, and then I read a lot of Frank Peretti, who's a Christian horror author. If you're catching the vibe that I grew up religious, I did. And then, so I had read Narnia, Lord of the Rings, Frank Peretti, Christian horror novels, and then a friend of mine at my martial arts studio when I was like 12 said, gotta read these, and handed me the first two A Song of Ice and Fire books. And I was like, whoa, books are good. I mean, I don't, get me wrong, like Lord of the Rings, Narnia, absolutely love them, and I'll die on the hill that Frank Peretti's pretty good whenever he's not being too religious. But it was mind-blowing. It was like a whole different thing, and my parents knew Narnia and Lord of the Rings, and so I brought home things that looked like that, and they're like, he's reading some good Christian books. And I was reading Song of Ice and Fire, and then my dad was talking to a friend of his from a church group who had read those, and he was like, hey, I saw these on your son's bookshelf, and he's like in junior high. I just feel like it's my responsibility to tell you what's in these books. And then my dad came to me, and he's like, hey, I talked to my friend Kevin, and he told me what books you're reading. He also told me that it's the greatest story ever told, and I'm going to let you read it. And I'm not going to tell your mom.
I was like, right, you know. I was primed to really have an angry word about Kevin, but it sounds like Kevin's
no, Kevin. Okay, apparently, Kevin was like, "You have to let him read these books, but I just want you to know that you have to have a talk to with him about what's in these books.
You have to talk to him about sexual assault.
just to
yeah,
be clear.
Like, yeah. Hey, just so you know, raping and pillaging is bad." And I was like, "Yeah, Dad, I know. I'm 12, but I'm not dumb." And so that's like kind of my first foray into that area of things. And I should specify, around that time is also when I started Wheel of Time. And then I only had those first two books, but I blew through Wheel of Time and I was obsessed with it. And then, yeah, after Wheel of Time, I read a couple, like I read some one-offs, like the first of The Golden Compass, the first of his Dark Materials. And I liked it, but like I didn't keep going. And there was just like this weird time where I was reading a bunch of like first books and series and just never like quite hitting the same high that I felt whenever I really fell in love with The Wheel of Time. And then like eventually back around and finished what was out of A Song of Ice and Fire, which I talked about on the guest podcast we were just on. I still haven't technically finished the last one, but we'll get into that later. And then I was in like a big reading slump, like all through college after high school, until I met some friends, one of which is the person who introduced all of us, and that introduced me to Red Rising. And then I was hospitalized for like 3 days. And I had this book and I was like, let's lock in. And I fell in love with the Red Rising series. I mean, it absolutely blew me away. It was the first time I felt like I was like, felt the way I did reading in like the back of the car in junior high. You know, like I was just so locked into the story and I absolutely loved it. And I blew through that trilogy so quickly. And then I didn't go into the second series for a while. But that's whenever my friend Tim was like, hey, you ever do audiobooks? I was like, no, that's not real reading. He's like, you should try this one. And I was like, I'm going to hate it. And then it was The First Law, and it's a perfect audiobook. And it like just sold me on audiobooks forever. And I did the first trilogy of The First Law. And then I did all of Stormlight Archives that were out at the time. And then I did the rest of The First Law. And then I went back and did the new Stormlight Archives that had come out in the meantime. And that's that, like, I'm sure there's books in there that I haven't mentioned, but that's the big ones. That's the major book journey. And then Cross has made me read Mr. Begone, which rocked, and then also got me to my first Stephen King book ever, which is wild. And it's not even a Stephen King book, it's a Bachman book.
Yeah,
and that's
right.
The Long Walk. And then I watched the movie and then I was like, why did you do this to me? I feel emotions and I don't like doing that.
Emotionally devastating. Yeah.
My first foray into Stephen King is recorded for everyone to hear. I fucking hated it.
Oh, no. What was it?
PJ loved it.
I mean, I'll pretend like
I've... Sorry. PJ did hate that. Never mind.
I said, I'll pretend
that.
Like I've watched all the episodes or listened to all the episodes.
Yeah, old 275.
It was one of his short stories. It was the one with the dog and the crocodile.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't remember what it was called, but I was like, this will be a fun way, because we were doing some short stories. So I was like, this will be a fun way to kind of like introduce PJ. And I was like, it's a free story online. Anyone could go read it for free. Perfect. And then we read it and I was like, well, it's a metaphor. And PJ's like, I don't fucking care, dude. Like, this is
not my thing. Yeah. Look, I've only done the one so far, but from what I'm hearing about it, I'm getting real Long Walk vibes from it for sure. No, I loved Long Walk. No complaints.
PJ also loves some complaints, a lot when he read an actual book, you know, two or three years later. Yeah.
Stephen King does definitely, especially being in his 20s at the time that he wrote the book, write breasted boobily quite a bit. But, you know, other than that, great books.
He definitely has the breasted boobily problem all over those early books, which includes Salem's Lot. So,
okay, cool. Well, I'm ready. I like vampires, and I might like breasted boobily more if there's vampires involved. So,
yeah, it's fair. Fair. Yeah, it's a good one. Cool. Sweet. What would you say your favorite series is?
You asked me that a year ago, 2 years ago, maybe.
Yeah.
Wheel of Time.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's The First Law.
Yeah,
I do think it's The First Law. Red Rising is like this weird thing where it's like, might be more than Wheel of Time, but also I don't think I can say that, you know, like, I think I do like Foxy Shazam more than Rush, but I would never admit it to myself or anybody else.
As he puts it down immortally in his introduction episode.
Yeah, exactly. Like, at the end of the day, I think that like Rush is the most like quintessential band to like my love of the instrument I play. I'm a drummer. And my love of rock and roll and prog rock and everything that got me into everything else. But I think that if you broke down how many hours I've spent listening to three albums by Foxy Shazam, it's more than all of Rush's discography, you know? And that's kind of how I feel about like Red Rising to the Wheel of Time. Like, Wheel of Time's more important to me, more foundational. Red Rising, I've read more times than the Wheel of Time for sure. So
I've held that own internal debate on myself after reading the entirety of The First Law and then getting to re-examine it so closely with PJ over the last year. I'm like, is this my is this better than The Dark Tower? Is this my favorite series? I don't think so. And I'm really excited eventually to read The Dark Tower on the podcast so that I can kind of kill confirm that, because I'm pretty confident that I prefer Roland's journey on the whole. But oh man, it's close. And that, it's kind of like that stings a little bit when you're like, oh no, my darling.
Roland and Shivers in a room.
You know? Yeah, right. Exactly. Oh God.
I don't know. I haven't read Dark Tower, so.
Yeah, well, that's part of the reason.
I assume you're
a natural fit.
I assume Roland is probably a really mediocre side character, and we meet him in like one book. And
for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So.
Mm-hmm. He only has that one short story, and that's really
good. Which, yeah, but it's really good, right?
It's really good. Really, really long. And I love the Rush connection too. Rush for a very long time was PJ's favorite band. I had never drawn that connection. You
right
jerks.
First and second live show ever for me.
Oh, I've only seen them live once, and it was well into my live show years, but I did side tangent here. My dad's favorite band of all time is Rush. And whenever they were doing the Rush 40 tour, we like managed to get tickets, and he had seen them a bunch of times. None of us had ever seen them, but we all grew up on Rush, like me and my brother. Yeah. And so me and my brother, my dad and my mom went to see Rush, and we got the nosebleediest nosebleed tickets in San Jose. And we could barely you can see the stage, you can see the screens for sure. But like, we were like, all right, well, we're here and that's all that matters. And this is so cool. And Rush sent like some stadium employees, and their specific like ask was, go to the people in the worst seats, obstructed view, farthest back, like whatever it is, like find like the 20 people in the worst seats and offer them floor, because the floor wasn't full. And we were luckily within the 20th worst seats. And so we got pulled up to floor, and we got to watch Rush 40 at floor. I was 23, maybe. I got way too drunk, but I do remember the whole show. I did cry twice, and then I annoyed the shit out of my parents as me and my brother like just smashed in the backseat of the car driving back to Fresno, California. Hell on earth. Scream singing Crocodile Rock by Elton John for some reason. I don't know what happened, but like somewhere along the way.
That's
a memory that will stick with me forever. Rush is such a special place in my heart. But
yeah,
I think my first show for them was their Snakes and Arrows tour.
Good album.
It was pretty good.
Yeah.
I think I was in like seventh grade or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was not. I don't think I could have handled it in seventh grade. I don't think I was ready for that.
That's fair.
That's some developing to do because that's just.
I think I would have gotten a lot more.
I might be 6'6 if I saw Rush in seventh grade. But, you know.
That's my secret.
Exactly.
Seeing Rush twice. That and
if you, HGH. Whenever you see Rush, you do the Grinch thing, and your heart grows six times the size. If you're still growing, your body adjusts. If you're already locked in, you're just stuck with a condition. That's where I'm at. So.
Josh,
mm-hmm.
to have a stark segue, not a segue. We're going to totally different.
More of a
subject.
Bird scooter.
What would you say your favorite cocktail is, and also what is your favorite spirit?
All right, that is a complex question. It's not. The truth of the matter is my favorite cocktail is actually what I have right here next to me. It's so you put two like. Cubes in a rocks glass and you pour some whiskey over it. Best cocktail in the world. It yep. just is. Whiskey in a cup is kind of undefeated, but I think my favorite spirit is rum. I just don't like rum cocktails as much as
really?
Whiskey cocktails because they're like, oh, I love a good tiki drink, but they're all so sweet. And yep. I just really like an intense, like spirit forward thing. But I think that rum has maybe the most out of any liquor like, expression and like range, especially for price. Like rum is an incredibly priced craft liquor. Whenever you start getting into like higher end rum, you're dealing with mid-level whiskey prices. And I think that just makes rum and gin. Rum and gin are my two, like if I'm like trying to get fancy and like try a bunch of stuff, I like rum and gin. But real talk on my favorite cocktail, it's a Vieux-Carré.
A Vieux-Carré? What's a Vieux-Carré?
A Vieux-Carré is going to be a rye whiskey cocktail developed in New Orleans. It's called Vieux-Carré because it's French for view from the square. It has Benedictine, it has Remy, and it has rye whiskey and then a bunch of bitters and some other stuff. But it is just, it's, besides a Sazerac, about as classic New Orleans old world cocktail as you can get, and it's my favorite cocktail.
Nice.
And that's the I'll words in whiskey, you know?
Hey, the words are Vieux-Carré, the whiskey is in it, so I feel good about it.
Excellent. And we're all sipping on a little sipping whiskey as well here. What did,
I'm
what
doing
did
apple
y'all...
juice and I just lied to them. I'm trying to like have the upper hand here, but oh, I'm sorry. Not to derail. Do you remember the time that I chugged a whiskey bottle in front of you guys?
Oh, yeah.
But it was iced tea that I put in an empty whiskey bottle just to see your reactions. And I really thought everyone would know I was fucking with you from the second I started. But everybody stuck with it. I've never felt so bad for a prank. Like, you guys were legitimately afraid for my life.
I think part of that was either Leslie selling it. Or also being in the dark. I can't remember which.
Leslie sold it. Leslie was a good actor. Yeah. I mean,
yeah, we were very concerned.
Little Fableman over there. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do think my wife might be like a fae trickster god that just sort of moved in. But
I just sort of moved in.
Love her to death.
A Matt Coffin type, if ever there was one.
Exactly.
What whiskey are we having this evening, though? What's the outside of the apple juice trick?
As somebody who worked at like craft breweries for a while and then worked at very fancy Italian cocktail bars, I think that there's something that you hit whenever you're like really around high end like beers and spirits. Where do you start to realize you like the cheap stuff? Old Forester has been my favorite whiskey probably for like the past couple of years. And there's nothing crazy going on there, but it's $22 and it tastes like $35. You know, like, I don't know. There's like a disillusionment that comes whenever like everybody's always ordering like Pappy Van Winkle from you and you're like, yeah. And then you finally try it because you're like mystified by it and you're like, oh, yeah, it's pretty good. That just makes you be like, oh, maybe I should just love what I love. I think that like Jameson, Old Forester, and then like if I'm going a little bit fancy, I really love Basil Hayden Those are probably like my three go-to whiskeys. So
nice.
Totally, totally fair. Love that. PJ, what are you sipping on?
My whiskey.
If you say Patty Van Winkle,
five times. I've got the Suntory Hibiki.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah. Actually, maybe my favorite like $100 bottle.
Easily.
I love Hibiki.
It might be my favorite whiskey. I think PJ said that on the last episode that we recorded with it, and I was like, yeah, I think I agree, actually, the more that I thought about it.
It's really fucking good, but at the same time, to Josh's point, like, I get a whole lot of like great experiences with way cheaper bottles of whiskey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, for sure. And there's like a fear whenever you get like a really nice bottle of whiskey, like, am I drinking this at the right time? You know, mm-hmm. like it sits on the shelf and you're like, is now when I pour myself the Hibiki? I don't know. You know, I've never had that question with Old Forester. I've been like, I could go for some Old Forester, and then I have some Old Forester. You know, I will say there is a brewery in San Diego where I live. It's called Liberty Call. Just their house, their like main house whiskey tastes incredibly comparable to Hibiki, and it's like a $35 bottle. And I it's a little bit too, it's like veteran owned, so it's a little too America for me. There's like flags on the bottles. I don't get it all the time, but like it's pretty good.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Excellent.
They got pride flags in there though, so like I feel okay. You know, like I walk in, I'm like, all right, you guys are chill.
We got a couple of them. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. So
I feel you on the lower end equation. That's how I feel about like Bullet Rye in particular. I also occasionally, like, I have a bottle of Bullet Bourbon over there, but that's usually typically my go-to on sort of like the lower end of things. But this evening I'm having a Whistle Pig Piggyback Bourbon 6-year. It was pretty good.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Nice.
Every Christmas, my mom gets me and my brother like the Whistle Pig like mini bottle sampler that has all their like high end things. They only release it around Christmas at Costco's, I think. But I love Whistle Pig.
So we did.
I've never bought it for myself.
Totally fair. I also haven't bought this for myself. I bought this as a gift. I bought went in with my dad and my brother on this as a gift, a trilogy pack of the Whistle Pigs. And it was like the 6-year rye, the 6-year, and then I think the 10-year was what the pack was. And we were going to open them over July, and we only ended up opening the 6-year. And then my uncle went, you keep this one, buddy. And he just like, ooh. He was like, he shipped the other two back with him, and he's like, Cross, you take this one home. And I was like, hell yeah. I mean, like, I paid for this technically, but like, I got my gift back.
You really weigh the options of like, the polite thing is to like decline twice and then take it on the third one, but like, I don't really want to risk it.
I did decline. He left it with a sticky note when he went to the airport Airbnb, and so I had to take it.
Oh, speaking of airports and whiskeys, you two fine gentlemen bought me a really good, way overproofed Nashvillian whiskey.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And I'm trying to remember the name, but that rocked and it lasted me a long time. That is the strongest like punch in the face whiskey I have ever had in my life.
What was the name of that?
I remember.
We spent a long time finding it. I remember.
I just have to say, you guys bought me. It was really good. It was very effective. And it was a hangover in a bottle. I mean, I could not like have more than two of those, like, but without just being like, I'm done, I'm going to bed, and I'm calling out. Like, that's, it was the most, like, I think they were lying about how overproof it was, and they were already hyping up how overproof it was on the bottle, because I think they were, like, underplaying it, honestly. They're like, well, we can't tell anyone this is rubbing alcohol dyed brown, but, like... We'll just say it's 140, you know?
Absolutely.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that was a good one.
It was really yummy, though, and I appreciated it very much.
I can't remember what the name of that was.
I'll find the name. It'll come back up. And
It'll turn up.
Next time the three of us are all on cam, you know?
Yeah. I do want to ask, since kind of rounding out this episode, Josh, do you have any questions for PJ about surviving the gauntlet, the fuckery, the shit show, as it were?
I have a question for PJ and a question for Cross, but they're kind of the same question.
Sure.
Okay. But they're worded slightly different.
Mine's a joke. I know it is already.
Yeah. Well, PJ, how do you do it? And Cross, how dare you?
See?
So I... I have grown to, I don't know if I can even say that I've grown to really, really love this. I've really, really loved this experience. I have not been a reader my entire life. That's the whole point of the show, from the impetus of it. It has made me one. I am a reader now. It feels really good.
Yay. Man. Yeah, PJ.
That's something
PJ
that
recently
feels
finished
good
the
to
second
hear,
Gentleman like, Bastards book, and I know that because my car told me, and I was like, oh. I was like, oh, you read the whole thing, huh?
Reading for yourself?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's, man, that actually just like, that's such a warm feeling to hear somebody who's like, I wasn't a reader, and now I am one. Because it's like, it's a medium that's still huge. Everybody, you know, lots of people read, but like, there's so many people in the world that don't realize they're missing out on their favorite story because the medium that it's presented in. And that's so cool.
Yeah, I feel very fortunate on the how dare I side of this equation that like, A, this worked as well as it did for as long as it did, and B, that it also encouraged you to kind of step beyond in a lot of ways. So I'm amped. Obviously, we're going to have PJ back as frequently as possible or as available to talk all these different things. But yeah. I'm amped.
I do want to say, like, on my end, I'm so happy to be here. I kind of mentioned to Cross while talking to you just about this, like, the whole situation that, like, hey, as a joke, like, what if I did it? And you were like, yeah. And I was like, oh, my God, I was joking, but I wanted it. Like, I did. I wanted to do it. But, like, there, to me, like, so much, and I just want to express this because, like, you two, I care the most about, like, how you feel about this thing that you created that's so cool, but also there's listeners, and like I do really care that they also understand that, like, to me, in my mind, like I'm keeping PJ's chair warm, you know, like I want to be here forever, and anytime PJ is like, hey, that's my chair, that's PJ's chair, you know? Like, I'm so happy to be here. PJ has the cutest baby in the world in no time, and I'm here to keep reading books with you, and I'm not a replacement for PJ. I'm just happy to be here, you know? And that's like important for me to say. I feel lucky and honored and just like really pumped to talk books with you.
I couldn't be happier with my seat holder, my
your,
seat
yeah,
warmer.
Yeah, yeah, your bench warmer. Captain Toasty for you, Papa. Yeah.
No, I really do think that transitioning from me to you in this role is going to be an easy one. I think you're going to slot into this position very, very well, and the listeners will appreciate that. I hope, I think, I believe.
I'm really excited, and I hope so, and believe so also. And we did, I don't know if Cross told you, we are going to record live in person once a month at your place.
Hey, I've got one spare bedroom.
We can cuddle.
Yeah, it's a big bed. it's a California king.
Well, ooh,
not a, is that, it a California king?
Hold
I can't
on, wait,
remember.
That's what I call.
It's big.
It is.
Okay,
that's what I call me. Like, right. I'm a California king. A California short king. Sorry. But,
well, excellent. I feel like that's a great place to leave it on a little self-deprecation. Thank you guys so much for listening and everything like that. You know where to find us. This is obviously the introduction to things to come. So I'll say with this should be our short trailer as well, talking about the next series that we're going to be covering, Empire of Silence. So, or sorry, The Sun Eater with the first book, Empire of Silence. So very, very excited to get started on that. All right.
I'm pumped.
Woo. All right. We will see you next week.
Bye.